Hey, Airbnb hosts, Natalie here. You already hear me every Wednesday on No Vacancy, the podcast, but I've decided to add a bonus episode at the last Friday of every month called Airbnb Advice Column. Every month, I'll ask you to submit your questions, pick 3 to 5 that I think most of you could benefit from, and those will go in here. So sit back, enjoy this monthly bonus episode, and thank you for writing in your questions to Airbnb Advice Column. XOXO, Natalie. Happy Friday, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Airbnb Advice Column. I've got 4 questions queued up for you today, so let's jump on in. First off is Priscilla, who said, how to decide if I should do midterm or short-term rentals? Okay, I don't know if you're asking this in the like pre-purchase phase. If you are, then I think you need to decide which one just aligns better with you. And then once you've decided you want to do short-term or midterm, that calculation is going to affect where you should be looking for properties. Short-term right now, there's a lot of regulations. Some places have higher taxes if you do short-term instead of midterm, anything less than 30 days. So if you're leaning towards midterm, that opens a lot more possibilities market-wise for you. But those markets are going to be different, right? You're going to be looking closer to corporate travel centers, places where a lot of businesses are sending people in, maybe by hospitals, maybe by universities. If you're pretty sure you want to stick with short term, I would be looking at, close to national parks or lakefront, riverfront, beachfront, maybe by a theme park, something like that. So I don't know if you're asking this in the I haven't even purchased property yet, which one should I do? If you're in that boat, you need to decide first which one just aligns better with your goals. There's typically more profits, more revenue involved with short-term rental, but it's more work, right? So what makes more sense to you? And then once you figure that out, you're going to analyze the markets you're looking at differently. If you're already in a property and now you're debating, should I do short-term or midterm? It's very hard for me to give you an answer without knowing like what market you're in or what the regulation is or the taxes there. But I would say it never hurts, if you're able to, it never hurts to at least secure an STR permit. And then even if you're doing midterms at your property and you feel like that's easier for you and that's what you're leaning towards, at least if you ever have like an awkward gap where somebody checks out on the 1st and the next person isn't coming till the 7th, you have 1 week there that you can legally short-term rent it. So yeah, I wish I could give you more info, but without like addresses and knowing the market that you're in, it's very hard to analyze this, but hopefully that helps. So just know it's going to be a different calculation if you're deciding this before you're in the property. Figure out what works better for you, midterm versus short, and then use that to identify a market that works better. If you're already in the property and you're leaning towards midterm or something, if you're able to, I would at least secure a short-term rental permit. And just because you have an STR permit doesn't mean you have to use it as an STR. You can still always try to find 30-day guests. If you're going to do that, one tip would just be don't open your calendar too far in advance because you don't want to have like 1 weekend booked 4 months out from now. And then you get a 30-day plus inquiry and now you can't host them because you've already committed to 2 nights for somebody for a short-term rental. So you'll have to kind of like play with mixing those strategies, but hopefully that helps. All right, question number 2 comes from Jeannie, who said, what lists do you trust when it comes to finding top markets to invest in? I love this question, and I notoriously do not trust any list out there. Anytime that I see somebody publish something that's like, here's the top 10 markets to invest in 2024, whatever, insert year, I instantly throw it out. Because what are they basing that off of? I have seen articles published on this topic. Here are the top 10 markets to invest in. And then when you go read how they are qualifying what's the top 10 market is the top 10 places that are generating the most revenue. And I have literally seen 2 of the markets listed on there were Seattle and San Francisco, both of which have the worst regulation. Like, I don't even know if you can get a short-term rental permit in either of those markets. So yeah, the existing listings that are there are killing it revenue-wise because nobody else can get in and compete with them. And these articles, I don't know, there has to be some sort of accountability or something. Like, you can't just publish an article, in my opinion, that says, hey, here are the top 10 revenue. I mean, I guess if they're not lying, if they're just telling you that these are the top 10 revenue markets, and that's one thing, but if they're telling you to go invest here And it's very easy to see that these places have blocked that regulation or have prevented, there's a moratorium or a cap in place and you can't get a permit. That is so unethical to me. And how many people just follow this and they're like, perfect, San Francisco, Seattle, best markets to invest in. Let me jump right in. And then they go in and realize that they can't even get a permit. So I've seen lists that qualify things like that. I've also seen lists where, like, Vegas, for example, will often show up on top 10 lists. If anyone's invested in Vegas, I mean, I hope that you're doing well. That is a market I will never touch. I will never, ever, ever touch Vegas, because those top 10 lists that I've seen where Vegas makes the cut, they say that these are the places where the most tourism is generated. When people go to Vegas, what is the draw? The draw is the strip. It's to stay in a hotel on the strip. Yes, some people book Airbnbs offsite, especially if you have a bigger group. Maybe you'll want like a 4-bedroom plus or something. But the entire draw of Vegas is the hotel scene. So if you're reading a top 10 list that's like, oh, this will be a great place to invest because there's so much tourism dollars coming in, those tourism dollars are specifically for hotels. You cannot extrapolate that to short-term rentals. So I don't know, every time I've seen a top 10 list, I've immediately been able to pick out like, this is faulty, this is faulty, that's inaccurate. I just don't trust the whole top 10 market thing. So back to your question, I know that you asked, what lists do you trust when it comes to finding top markets to invest in? The generic lists that are just put out on the internet, these are the top 10 markets to invest in 2024, I don't trust those at all. What I would do instead is if you can figure out what your goals are. So if for you, it's cash flow, if for you, it's cash on cash return, you know, it's going to depend. If you just want a market that's going to appreciate really well and you're fine breaking even for now, those are totally, totally different markets you're going to be exploring and property types. So I think you just need to figure out what your goals are. And then from there, you can dig in a little bit deeper and maybe try to research like what are the best lists for cash on cash return, or what are the best markets for cash on cash return or something. You guys heard the episode recently with Strike, spelled out STRIQ. They're a really great tool for tracking cash on cash return. If you decide that you just want a well appreciating market, I would reach out to some realtors or look at housing market trends or places that have a ton of new jobs and infrastructure coming in. So yeah, overall top 10 lists, I don't trust them. They're just like tracking random factors that don't translate into actually short-term rental real estate investing. So there's my two cents on that. But figure out your goals and then you can kind of reverse engineer the right market from there. All right, next question comes from Alyssa, who said, we are about to put an offer on a duplex and have enough to cover the 20% down payment. But our lender said we can qualify for a 3.5% FHA down payment since we will be living in one half. Would you do the 3.5 or the 20? Pros and cons? That is a great question. Okay, so you have enough to cover the 20%. You are ready to go in with that. And now your lender said 3.5 is an option for you because you're going to be living in one half. Here's what I do. And here are the pros and cons, okay? With 20%, you're obviously putting down more. You might be able to get a lower interest rate and you're going to have a lower monthly payment because you've already put 20% down, right? You're only taking out 80% of the total purchase price for your loan. 3.5%, your monthly payment is going to be higher, but you're coming in with much, much, much lower cash upfront. But you already said that you have the cash to do it. Here's what I would want to know. What is the condition of the property? Are you planning to do any renovations on it? If you are planning any renovations, I would do the 3.5%. And note, with anything less than 20%, you're going to have to pay PMI, private mortgage insurance, which gets added to your monthly payment. And as soon as you hit that 20% that you've paid and off in principal, that will wipe away, that'll disappear on its own and be deducted from your monthly payment. But until then, you'll have to pay a little bit extra. But if you have renovations coming up, it might be worth it for you to just hang on to more of your cash, because what does everybody say? Renovations always take twice as long than you expected and cost twice as much than what you expected. So it would be good to keep more cash on hand in that case. If the place is pretty much move-in ready and you guys have been saving up and you feel good about the 20% and you want the lower monthly payment and just want to own more equity in it right out, I don't see any problem with that. I'm sure a lot of people listening would have a different opinion and say always pay the smallest amount that you can just so that you have more money for the next investment or something like that. But I don't know. You didn't provide any context that you guys are planning another investment. Maybe this is one and done for now, and then you want to slowly save up for the next one. I can't make that call for you, but those are the pros and cons, right? So you can either pay less now and have a higher monthly payment and have more cash on hand if there's going to be renovations needed. And then what you could do too in that case is if you're able to pull off the renovations and stay within budget and you still have the money left over, you could always just start adding more to your monthly payment or just send a lump sum of that amount to meet the 20% down. You can just pay that off, right? As long as you make sure you have a loan that doesn't have like prepayment penalties or anything like that, but you could just pay that off. So yeah, personally, if there were any renovations involved, I would want to go with the lower down payment just so I know for sure I have enough money to get me through the renovations and then I'm not caught halfway through not being able to complete the project. So that's what I would do. But if it's like, if it's pretty turnkey, like I said, and you guys feel good about the 20% and you were ready to part with that already, I mean, go for it. You're going to know what feels right. If you guys have been saving up for 20% this entire time and you were already mentally parting with it, I don't want you to hang on to that difference, that 16.5% difference, just because now it's like, oh, we can get away with a lower down payment. You're still going to have to pay the full amount eventually, now with more interest and a bigger monthly payment. So don't just be tempted like, oh, now we can get such a cheaper down payment. You still are on the hook to pay the entire house. But regardless of what you decide, congratulations on finding a duplex and being ready to put in an offer and saving up that 20%. Whether you go with it or not, that is a huge accomplishment. So congrats. All right, final question comes from Taylor. Co-hosting, please help. I've been wanting to co-host for the longest time, but have no experience. Why would anyone hire me? Well, girl, they're not going to hire you with that attitude, are they? Why would anyone hire me? Oh my goodness. Okay, I wouldn't hire you either as a property owner. Here's the deal. And this is the shitty thing about co-hosting, okay? Every person I talk to who like really, really wants to get into co-hosting is somebody who can't afford property yet. And that's why they're like, oh, co-hosting, that's the way that I can get in without property, right? However, the people I see who have the easiest time actually getting into co-hosting are people who already own and have proven the concept and have a successful case study on their own property. And they are able to be like, hey, owners, look what I can do. Look what I've done for myself. I can do this for you. If you're anything like me, you got into the short-term rental game looking for passive income. And since then, you've found that managing your listing is anything but passive. Sound familiar? Between messaging guests, managing your calendar, overseeing maintenance, it's a lot to tackle, and Hospitable is here to help. Hospitable saves hosts like you time by taking recurring tasks and guest messaging off your plate. You can automate responses to common questions, schedule messages throughout the booking flow, and even get AI to draft messages for you. You'll also be able to manage your calendar across booking channels from one place and can integrate with third-party tools like smart locks and dynamic pricing. Hospitable is the highest rated software in the industry with a 4.9 out of 5 rating. Hospitable gives you confidence to automate more of your short-term rental management so you can get more of your valuable time back. Try Hospitable for free with a 14-day trial. And if you use this link, you'll get an additional 25% off for 3 full months. Just head to hospitable.com/novacancy. Again, that's hospitable.com/novacancy to claim your offer. Hospitable. Sleep easy, host confidently. So it's kind of shitty because the people who desperately want co-hosting the most have the hardest time getting the clients, and the people who already have their own property and maybe are in a position to buy another one, they're the ones who grow the easiest. The irony of that is not lost on me, okay? But my best tip for you, if you have no experience in actually managing or co-hosting, that is okay. It's not the end of the world. What you need to do, in my opinion, is come through with a new service offering. So offer to be a stager, offer to help people set up, come in and assemble IKEA furniture, tear down those cardboard boxes and get rid of it. If you can be a runner for properties, if you want to start being a cleaner, if you want to be a photographer, if you want to paint a mural for someone, there are so many odd jobs that you can come up with to help support hosts, be a bookkeeper for hosts, like anything that interests you, do their branding, do their social media. And if you can establish expertise there and trust with that host, and have a relationship, it's so easy at that point to then be like, hey, you know, I noticed that messages are coming in on your account and sometimes it takes 15 minutes to answer them. Is that something that you would want my help with? Do you want me to start taking over guest communication? I'd be happy to. Even if it's just like, hey, who's answering your messages between 8 p.m. and 8 a.m.? Do you have anybody on the night shift? I can help with that and I'll take a commission for doing that. That to me is the best way to get your foot in the door with no experience. I completely reject this idea. A lot of coaches preach like, oh, you should be willing to co-host for 6 months for free, or, you know, start with a month-to-month contract or discount your rate to 10% and then go up to 20% after 6 months. I feel like when you start doing things like that, you're already setting the stage of like, I'm not worth the 20 or 25% I initially want to charge. I'm not worth committing to for a year. Like, you're already setting the tone that you have to kind of prove your value. And I'm not a fan of that. I think if you can come in and make money by offering another service and then layer on top of that your co-hosting, that to me is the winning product right there. I'm actually really excited to announce this question came at the perfect time because I have my co-hosting crash course is now officially available. This week we launched it to Level Up Your Listing Summit attendees. So if you were there in person, you already got the email to sign up for the co-hosting crash course, and we cover everything from finding clients, pitching clients, onboarding clients, payment structure, business structure, how to protect yourself, how to set expectations with hosts. The course comes with access to my co-hosting contract, my co-hosting scripts, how I invoice my owners. There's an invoice template there, how I track expenses with them. You get tons of resources and 7 videos that walk you through building a co-hosting business start to scratch. So like I said, Level Up Your Listing Summit attendees already got an email this week announcing the launch of that. And today, officially, I'm opening doors to the rest of my audience and community. So if you're listening to this, head to hostwithnatalie.com/co-host. And that's where you can sign up for the co-hosting crash course. And by using code NOVACANCY, you will be able to take $500 off the course right now. So do not wait, because that offer expires very soon. But you'll be able to take $500 off right now with code NOVACANCY. And again, this walks you through everything, 7 videos, start to finish, of finding owners, pitching them, onboarding them, the whole thing, setting expectations, what to include in your contract, and then you get those resources as well. And Taylor, I think that that would be an immense resource to you right now. We cover different unique ways to find clients without having any co-host experience. This course is really, really designed for both the owner who is already self-operating and now wants to pitch what they've done successfully on their own listing to other owners. That is who this is for, as well as the person who has zero hosting experience at all and just needs to get that foot in the door with the first property. So whichever of those boats you're in, this will be the right course for you. So again, head to hostwithnatalie.com/co-host and code NOVACANCY will get $500 off the course right now. Thank you guys so much. Have a happy Friday and happy Easter, and I'll see you back here next Wednesday.